Welcome to the Clam Jammers Podcast, the semi-erotic podcast exploring the strange world of smut and kitsch in all its forms. Welcome to the world of Shore, Miri, and put upon Penguin Crabsworth as they play, chat, and laugh their way through all of life's intimate topics. Come for the sex, stay for the weird.
Hello, everybody. We are back, and hopefully with a bit of a palate cleanser from last month.
Yes, hopefully. That's the goal.
Or we might horrify you, and you will clutch your pearls by the end of this episode. Who knows?
My goal was to not do anything harmful. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My goal was to try and find something that maybe a lot of people don't know about. Hopefully.
Well, I learned a lot that I didn't know about, let me tell you.
The more you know, knowing is half the answer.
We should probably tell the people what we're talking about. Yes. And what today's episode's going to be.
Yes, so today's episode is brought to you by the wonderful mind of Shore, which is, we have looked up some fetishes that we're going to share with each other and with you, dear viewers and listeners, really. It works.
Maybe one day we'll be on YouTube. Who knows?
Maybe one day. I'm sorting out this Spotify for podcasters thing because apparently I can record directly there and it will let me do audio.
Oh,
and video.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm trying to figure that out because I get to the point where I connect all my stuff in and then the steps just stop. And I'm like,
oh,
what isn't coming up? So I got to do troubleshooting there, but we'll see what happens. New things to come. Before we get started, because I was noticing that there's a lot of debate online about the difference between a fetish and an obsession. So I went to the Oxford Dictionary. So a fetish, there's two main meanings of it. The first one being a form of sexual desire in which gratification is strongly linked to a particular object or activity or a part of the body other than the sexual organs. The second definition is an inanimate object worshipped for its supposed magical powers or because it is considered to be inhabited by a spirit. So I think that's where some people can get confused because there is a bit of a spiritual, holy, religious secondary meaning for fetish.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and sometimes they can overlap. Who knows? And then obsession, because I was noticing like a bunch of people in the vernacular online, they're like, well, fetish and obsession are the same thing, except fetish is sexual, except it's not. Because an obsession is an idea or thought that continually preoccupies or intrudes on a person's mind. So anything can be an obsession. Because we do obviously have the hyperbolic term of like, oh my god, I'm so obsessed with your hair. But that's hyperbole. But if we go by the straight definition, it means that it's like preoccupying and intruding upon you. And it's kind of getting to the point where it's interfering with your life.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and a fetish can absolutely be that, but it doesn't have to be that. But it can be that, but it doesn't have to be. So, just so everybody knows about the wonderful Venn diagram we have going on. That's where we're operating out of. Also, we did try to stay away from... How do I put this?
I mean, anything...
Blatantly illegal?
Yeah, so anything that involved minors or non-consent, because there's a lot of different non-consent fetishes. Or sexual acts with animals, like all that stuff. I wanted this to be a more lighthearted episode and a little more on the silly side, to where even if we're not engaging or interested in any of these fetishes, we can discuss them and no one's going to be like uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So I left off a lot of those things that I thought were harmful or would kind of bring things down.
I did have one that it's one of those ones where I'm like, this is weird, but I can't tell if it's illegal or not. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there's a few that kind of like maybe toe the line a little bit.
Yeah. But yeah, so hopefully everybody gets to, hopefully we all come away from this learning something. That's what we're hoping for. But yeah, just in case we are staying away from like the blatantly non-consensual illegal stuff. But there is like, you know, stuff that toes the line. So just be aware of that. Just be aware of that.
And, I also want to say that I'm probably going to pronounce at least a couple of these wrong.
Oh, I'm pronouncing everything wrong. So don't you worry about that. So do we want to start off light? Or do we want to start off with the toe in the line?
I'd say light, and I was figuring we'd go back and forth, so I would do one and you would do one and so on.
Okay, well, I'm gonna let you go ahead.
Okay, so this one I'm honestly fascinated by. I don't share the interest, but I don't know, I think it's kind of interesting. Oh God, we're starting off, I can't already not pronounce these. Nebulophilia, which is
that is that having to do with galaxies?
No.
Oh, now I'm disappointed.
I wonder if there is one. We should look that up. Feeling aroused by fog.
Fog? Fog, that took me a minute.
I know, it is kind of like, I love foggy days. I don't like if I have to drive in it, but like if I walk outside and it's a really foggy morning, it's like magical.
Yeah, it is.
But I don't feel any arousal, and I just—
Ooh, I'm enveloped.
That's the thing, it's like, I don't know, I can't even imagine that. I mean, there's certainly weather that I enjoy and weather that I can't stand. I love fog. I think it's, like I said, I think it's magical. It's so neat to be in a foggy morning, especially if you're like in the woods.
Yeah.
But to feel a sexual arousal from that is something that I can't even imagine. How do you feed that fetish? Like, how do you lean into that? Because... do you get a fog machine and put it in your room or something?
Oh my God. Oh
or
my
does
God.
It have to be a natural fog? Like,
yeah. Well, what if, cause I've seen this in like, and I think I've touched on this before where like I used to hang around like the BDSM communities and stuff like that. Yeah. I tended to find that there's a lot of unhealthy exclusionary behavior that people don't want to admit to. So I'm wondering like, does that happen in the fog community? Like, it's like, oh, you use a machine. I'm
artificial fog?
Yeah. Like, I go all natural. Like, and then if it's like all natural fog, if there's like the urban versus the rural feeling, like woods versus an open plain, like now I've got this.
Or like the city dystopian kind of thing, or.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, like, I've got the, in my mind, there's all these cliques now.
Yes.
Fog.
Well, I don't know how large the fog community is, but I just thought that one was very, very fascinating.
It is. And actually, I have one to kind of go along with that.
Perfect.
So I ended up, I'm probably going to make a blog post about this, but I was like trying to separate everything by kind of like categories. And I found that it was like attraction to or necessary action. And I had this whole breakdown. Anyway, there is this interesting thing of like landscape, nature, environment, for lack of a better term, which fog goes into. And then this other one, actirasti, which is arousal to sun rays.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, my first thought, is, which is so silly, is like danger, because you're going to get skin cancer if you feed into this too much.
Yeah. So I was just like, that's interesting. But what also poked into my head was there is this weird, I don't want to say it's a fad or a trend because I genuinely don't know how many people were doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know. But this whole, like, I'm going to do yoga in the sun naked. And then it turned into, like, you want to do some downward dog so the rays go, like, up
your hole
or something like that. And I'm like, I'm wondering if there's a crossover there.
Apparently I missed the whole yoga sunning your butthole fad. What a shame.
And you were in California. That's like the ideal area for that to happen.
Well, that's the weather that I hate, is sunny, hot days. I just, the summers there are miserable.
Okay, so we know that is not your fetish.
No. I can safely say it is not.
Yeah, so that was a... Yeah,
Two very similar ones. Yeah,
but I read that and I was like, that's interesting. And then it... I can't remember what this one was called, but I didn't want to go down a rabbit hole, but there's people who, like, they have a fetish. They're sexually aroused by caves.
Caves are cool. But I can't imagine, again, it's the same thing. It was like, I can't get that connection between finding something interesting, fascinating, or even amazing. Some caves are just stunning. And making it sexual or having feelings of arousal. I can't make that jump.
The only connection I can make is, you know, like the people who do caving where, like, you have to exhale all your air to get through a certain section and it's super cramped and stuff.
Oh, the claustrophobia kind of
caving. Is I was like, I wonder if that's kind of an extension of bondage because you're tight and you're so packed in type thing. Like, that was the only connection I could make.
So there is claustrophilia, which is feeling aroused in closed and confined spaces, but it's chasmophilia, which is the caves, narrow cracks in rocks, walls, and crevices. So they're two different things, but they kind of go hand in hand to a point.
Yeah, and the Now I've got this vision of like cave fetishists rubbing up against stalactites. And I'm just like, so this is why when you go to see caves, you always go on the tour, because you don't want to walk in on somebody rubbing up on a stalactite.
God. I remember having to do that in school, in elementary school, having to go... where I grew up, there was this famous cave, like, hour and a half north of where I grew up. And so on a field trip, we went and did a tour of the caves and stuff.
I mean, caves are cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it was, you know, obviously it was educational because we talked about how caves are formed and all that kind of stuff because, you know, school.
But, yeah, It's interesting. I mean, I don't look at a cave and go like, yeah.
No. We kind of got away from the one and then the other.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
We kind of comboed, though. We comboed.
We did. Do you want to do another one?
I have another one for the, for nature.
Okay.
Because I was just like, what the... So, I guess the best way for me to describe this is plants. So, an example of that is dendrophilia.
That's on my list.
Oh, there you go. It's a crossover. Yeah, and I was like, okay.
Okay.
Okay. I guess. I mean... I suppose it explains the vegetable thing.
Oh my god.
Did you have any thoughts on it?
On being attracted to trees?
Oh, yeah, because dendrophilia is specifically trees. But yeah, did you have any... again, other, like the rubbing, I guess, but yeah. I mean, I like a good tree. I just don't like it that much. We're friends.
No, I don't get it. But the first thing when I read that one, the first thing that popped in my head was, I don't remember her name or exactly when this happened. I think it was in the 80s, maybe. Maybe 90s. That woman who lived in a redwood tree for a couple years so that it wouldn't be cut down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first thing I thought of. And I was like, well, she was like a conservationist kind of thing, just trying to save this super, super old growth tree. But that's the first thing that popped in my head. But I don't know. I think you brought up a good point with... I shouldn't have started talking because I did not have that sentence fully formed in my brain. I didn't write down the name of it, but there was a fetish that involves abrasion. So feeling aroused by scratchy or harsh surfaces like sandpaper. I could see that kind of being a crossover with bark if you have that same sort of fetish. It could also link to other things just being in that environment, like having a primal urge to be chased through the woods and things like that. But that's just having being in like a foresty kind of environment. Actually being attracted to a tree itself? I don't know. I don't get it. I guess it's alive, but it's a tree. And it kind of starts getting me down the road of, did you ever see that show, My Strange Addiction?
Yes.
So, like, there was the man who was obsessed sexually with his car and, like, married his car and would commit acts with his car.
Didn't he sexually assault the TV crew's car?
Did he?
I thought they caught him, like... It's implied he had sex, but maybe he was just feeling it up. But yeah,
he was cheating on his car.
Maybe they have an open relationship. What the hell am I saying? But yeah, I don't know if it was staged or not. Like,
I think it was TLC, and if it's a TLC show, it could easily be staged.
Yeah, like I don't care enough to like go and seek out people who are on the film crew who can tell you what's true and what wasn't, you know? But yeah, that was like a big thing, was like they woke up and they're filming him, and the guy doesn't realize they're filming him, and he is like totally feeling up or sexually assaulting their vehicle.
That's so weird.
Yes, also that is a string of words I never thought I'd say.
I don't like that he's doing it to someone else's car, because that would make me feel icky. I don't want to like have that on my belongings.
Yeah. That's weird.
Don't involve other people and other people's things in your fetishes. Without consent.
Yeah, there was... do you mind if I go on a slight tangent?
Always.
So there's voyeurism and exhibitionism.
Yes.
And a couple years ago in Toronto, there was this like BDSM couple who... I'm assuming that they wanted to go viral as well. So there was like that component. But they would go on like... She'd be in her full dom gear and he'd be in his like leather puppy gear, which is harness and a mask, and have him on a leash and go for walks in the middle of the day in downtown Toronto. And then
I think
they'd
heard something about this.
And I think there was a video where she took him on the subway and like handcuffed him and they started a play session. And it's just like, you know, that's why there are sex clubs. It's so that you can go into an area where that kind of behavior is expected. Like, don't involve non-consenting people in your stuff.
Yeah. I don't think that's okay in any circumstances, even if you're going, which obviously the subway is fully public and there could be children and everything there, but even if you're going to generally adult spaces like casinos or something where you're not really going to run into kids, I don't want to be involved in your voyeurism stuff. I have no interest whatsoever, so don't involve me. If it's a public space that's not inherently sexual, like a club, like a sex club, I don't think that that's okay.
Yeah, like it's you need to go to spaces where that is a set expectation.
Yeah.
Go to spaces where that isn't a set expectation. Like, I mean, I don't show up at like a power plant expecting them to put on a musical number. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then get angry that they aren't selling me box seats. Like, I don't do that. Because there's a certain expectation set by the venue that you're in. But yeah, so that was my like short thing on that about like, yeah, you know, don't involve non-consenting people. Oh shoot, is it my turn?
I don't remember.
Oh, whatever. So there is like tickling fetishes, but what yes. I thought was interesting was they can get very specific. So paternophilia, it's feeling aroused when tickled by feathers specifically.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I find it really weird how like broken down some of these things can get.
Because this one I understand a little more because I don't get aroused by being tickled. I hate being tickled. But there's a physical stimulation going on.
Mm.
So I kind of understand it more. I can get how people get there. By breaking it down to certain parts of the body or certain types of tickling, like with feathers, it's again a very specific physical sensation. So that's why that one I actually kind of understand more, is because it's more in just kind of a wheelhouse that I get, because I do get turned on by certain types of physical stimulation. Is it tickling? No, but it's a very, very close thing. So that actually makes sense to me, weirdly.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's just to me, I'm like, oh, we don't go with, like, umbrella stuff. We actually, like, give it a name for the very yeah. specific thing. So it's interesting just to see how broken down things can get.
My assumption would mean there's just enough people that are into all these little niche breakdowns of this that it was worth putting a name to.
So what's another one you found?
So this one, I don't even know what to say about it. Climacophilia?
Is it climbing?
Opposite, it's the arousal of falling downstairs or seeing specifically people falling
stairs.
Downstairs.
Specifically stairs.
Why? Like, you see someone fall downstairs in a movie and you're like, oh yeah, that's it. It makes me think that every act could potentially be someone's fetish.
Oh, this is true. I guess there's an aspect of danger with it, but this goes into my personal view where it's like, I don't really mind what anybody does for sexual gratification, except when it comes to you're doing harm either to yourself yes. or others that you can't walk back from very easily.
And this doesn't say like necessarily you cause someone to fall down the stairs, and it could be you yourself throwing yourself down the stairs.
But that can result in some really big damage issues to your body.
That's true. That's true.
Like you... Although now all I can picture is that like there's a niche of stunt people where like they got into it so that they can like have an outlet for their fetish. Because how many movies and TV shows have people falling down the stairs?
So many.
So just like, great, now I have that in my head.
These people watch Home Alone and lose their minds.
Oh god. Okay. So there are some interesting fetishes that come from modification and then also from fetishizing a person for a specific aspect of them. So there is two examples of this are acromophilia, which is arousal for amputees, either yourself or others, and then anastomophilia, which has to do with the extremes of size, so giant or dwarf, for example. And that's where it's like, because I've met some people who are like this, and some of them, like, you know, it's a part of who they are, it's a part of what they find attractive in a person, but it's not the end all, like, it's not the only thing they look
right.
for.
Right. It's not like they can't perform or something unless it's in that scenario.
Yeah. But then there are other people where they're so into it and so obsessed with it, they don't understand why it's like, I don't know why, like, so-and-so was offended that, like, you know, I talk to them or I find them sexually attractive because of this. Because, like, you know, I like them for who they are, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, but you only like them for that reason.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. It's not sort of like attraction and then you become interested. The only reason is because that. And it's because it's like, you can tell when somebody is either going really pleasing to someone, like they're always saying yes to them, or they're trying to like hem them into a box or something.
Yeah.
So it's like you're trying to force them to fit what you want rather than accepting them as they are. And there's a difference. But yeah, the amputee one, because you can get into people, and then this sort of crosses a bunch of other fetishes and stuff, where for them it's about amputating themselves.
That's so danger.
And that's where it gets tricky, and then it has crossover with there's a very, very, very small, I need to emphasize small, niche in the cock and ball torture area, where like basically it's a progression that happens. But very few people reach the kind of end point, which is a total removal of everything. They want the penis or the scrotum or everything gone.
I feel like I've heard about this before.
Yeah, but I also need to emphasize this isn't about, like, it's not a gender reconfirming surgery type thing.
Right, right.
It's not like that. It's that they've progressed to their ultimate end goal of having destroyed their own genitalia and removed it from themselves. And it has crossovers with all kinds of fetishes and stuff. So it's just kind of mention how, like, it can go from something really simple as like, oh, you know, I'm kind of attracted to people who have like amputations, and like, I'll be interested in a person, but you know, I want to get to know them. Like, you know, people who have a thing for red hair or something.
Yeah.
And then it can like move. There's that other extreme end of it where it's, you're doing it to a person. You're trying to force a person who has it to be what you want, or you're trying to change yourself to be it. So there's quite broad spectrums that these can go, which is interesting and disturbing at the same time.
Yeah.
Like
it really just depends on how far it's taken.
Yeah. Hence why we wanted to make the difference. Well, why I wanted to define the difference between fetish and obsession.
Yes.
I wanted to mention those two together because I felt that it was a good way to kind of encompass the scale of like where you can go on something.
It kind of vaguely links to one that I had, just talking about, you know, people's bodies that I didn't really like. So because of the way it was defined, teratophilia, was when I saw it defined as sexual attraction to monsters or deformed people. And I was like, wait, those are two different things. Those are two very different things. People are born with physical deformities, or they get in accidents and something happens and they get a physical deformity of some kind. That's not the same thing as a goddamn monster. To me, monster is I'm attracted to Mothman, a werewolf, vampires, Bigfoot, the creature from the Black Lagoon. Like, those are monsters. So yeah. To put them under one term feels mean.
It really does.
It feels so mean.
I'm wondering if that's like one of those, this definition hasn't been updated for modern times type thing.
Probably.
I mean, I hope that's what it is. I've been recently going through my book pile of doom. Speaking of inappropriate phrasing, but going through my book pile of doom. And some of the books I'm like, I really love this person's like perspective and how they've gotten, you know, all of these images and like pictures and stuff that don't normally get seen, and it's all collected in one thing. But because of the time period, some of the phrasing that they have, I'm just like, ooh, this needs to be updated. Like, this needs to get updated, man. They made a joke about how the North American settlers had to worry about getting scalped.
Oh.
And I'm just like,
oh.
That is a gross oversimplification of that of that period in history, and very, very inappropriate, especially when you're comparing it to. So the comparison they were making was that there was a combination of folk practices between Spanish settlers and South American indigenous people, whereas in North America you didn't have that same lasting trade-off. And they were saying, well, it's because, you know, that it was about do or live or die and survival. And, you know, they were too worried about saving their scalps. And I'm just like, but the Spaniards notoriously slaughtered how many indigenous people in South America? Like, there's layers to that. So, yeah, that's what just because I'm reading that book and I have to be like, it's the time period and they didn't update it.
So this is nothing.
That reminds me of that phrasing.
And now I'm going on a tangent based on what you've said. When I was buying a house in California, I had to sign, I mean, a ton of paperwork because you're buying a house. But one thing I had to sign was a CC&R. Do you know what that is?
No, I don't.
I don't know if it's a thing in Canada, but it's covenants, conditions, and restrictions. So CC&R of rules for like an area, like a neighborhood. I don't really know the difference between HOA and CC&Rs. I think an HOA just kind of enforces CC&Rs. But this house that I was buying wasn't in an HOA. But I still had to sign the CC&Rs, and they were so out of date that one of the like bylaws in it was that no person of color can live in this neighborhood.
My God!
Unless they were living as a live-in servant in a white person's household.
Oh my God!
And I had to sign that in order to buy the house. And they're like, obviously none of this is enforced and super out of date. And I'm just like, can we get together and just delete that paragraph, please? It's about time, don't you think?
Yeah, and also I'm kind of like, realistically, it shouldn't take a lot of debate or time to just get rid of it. Like, surely just one person has to say, get rid of it. It doesn't need like a month-long committee, right?
And I think I think because there was no HOA, there was no like governing body to handle anything, maybe. But I remember reading that because I read everything I sign, except for like the terms and agreements and any like software.
Yeah.
When I'm physically signing a contract of some kind, I read everything and I'm just like, holy shit, are you kidding me? Well, back to fetishes.
Yeah, so back to our regular scheduled programming. Well, you always get a bit of extra information with us, which always. I think is nice. Yeah, I think it's your turn to add.
So this one just kind of made me smile, and I thought it was funny. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe that's bad of me. But, oh god, stygiophilia?
Stygio?
Maybe? S-T-Y-G-I-O.
Oh, okay.
Feeling aroused by the thought of damnation or hellfire. And I just think that's funny.
I'm sorry, that makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of people with very complicated relationships with hell and damnation.
Oh yeah. And it reminds me of that song, Hellfire, from The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh my god!
Where Frollo's basically thirsting over Esmeralda and saying that she can either die and burn in hellfire or be my love slave. Subject matter for a kid's movie, by the way.
I mean, it's, you know, he's evil.
Yeah.
You know, he's a bad guy.
Have you read The Hunchback of Notre Dame?
I haven't read it, but apparently the hunchback is not pleasant in that book.
Nobody is pleasant in that book, except for maybe Esmeralda. But Esmeralda is a child.
Oh, no.
And so the context of that makes all the men around her even worse. I was traumatized by that book.
I see why Disney aged her up then.
Disney changed everything. Other than the location and names, everything is wildly different.
Probably for the best.
Very much for the best. Unless you don't mind having that story ruined for you, I don't recommend reading the book.
Oh man, okay.
So yeah, damnation or hellfire, I'm not surprised, especially with how religion can affect people. And traumatize people and take over people's lives. I'm not surprised to see that there's a group of people who are aroused by the thought of damnation and hellfire. I'm not remotely surprised.
I had to go back because I remember you said by monsters or the deformed, which was just weird. What was that word again?
Teratophilia.
So there's a related one to that. Savantophilia, which is sexual arousal and attraction to mentally challenged and deformed. What's with the deformed?
I purposely kept that off the list because that felt very predatory.
It feels really predatory. Yeah. But again, I only
because they love deformed people in there.
I'm like, maybe we need to update this language, guys.
Yeah.
Hey, Oxford Dictionary. Help us out.
It feels icky to lump them in with monsters.
Yeah, and also, because there's that, what was it, the Four Things movie?
I don't know what that is.
Oh god. Okay, so the plot line for it is they put an infant's brain inside a woman's body. And it's about her, so she rapidly progresses and, you know, finds herself through being a sex worker.
Oh god.
And I'm just like, you know, there are some ideas that really should not be on film, and
that's horrendous.
Yeah, it was getting like a lot of buzz in Oscar season, so I went to like, what is the concept behind that? And I read it and I was like, so I'm just
what
like,
you said it's called Poor Things.
Is it poor? I think it's Poor Things is what it's called. So that's why I brought up that one, because like I know it's a very predatory fetish and everything, but it's also the deformed language, and then it feels really topical because of that movie got like a bunch of Oscar buzz and stuff.
Oh, that's I'm sorry. I'm just, why is this such a big mainstream movie? How are people enjoying stuff like this?
Apparently the performance is fantastic, and I'm like, you could have had her find herself through not being massively abused.
Exactly.
No? Like
how it's just using harm to women as a plot device for the millionth time.
I'm just like, you know, there are some things that, you know, shouldn't happen. I think Nicole Kidman was in a movie where like this under 10-year-old boy pretends to be her reincarnated dead husband. And I'm just like, this is like really, really tricky territory here. Like,
yeah,
you need to not to say the least.
I forget her name, but there's some TikTok creator. Oh God, I feel bad because I don't remember her name. But she did a video talking about all the criticism around women reading romance novels and how people say, oh, it's basically just porn and why are you into this? And that's so stupid and disgusting and blah, 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 blah. And they made a very good point, which is how popular the Game of Thrones books were and obviously the show. But no one complained about that. And no one was talking about how it's, you know, just smut and why is that in a book? It's, there's no value for it being in a book. Basically the same criticisms. But in Game of Thrones, the sex is usually, or not usually, well, I don't know, I never read them. But often predatory, violent, and things like that. It's a lot of rape. It's a lot of, you know, underage and incest and all this other kind of stuff. Which in romance novels, that's usually not the case. A lot of romance novels, the bits and pieces I have read, it was all basically men worshipping the female main character.
Yeah.
You know? It's... I don't know. I don't know if I want to go down this road with our happy podcast.
Yeah, but it's interesting. But that's why I was like, oh yeah, this one's kind of related. And then there's this movie out that, yeah. But on a more fun note, because I always like doing this, especially for this guy Eli, who we love. So do you remember the vampire script I wrote that he?
How
felt?
Could I ever forget? Like that's. That will remain in my brain until the day I die.
So, there's a subset of blood play called menophilia, which is you are specifically aroused by menstrual blood.
I mean, I get that distinction. Because, I mean, breeding is obviously a fetish. That's... well known. I mean, it has to do with reproduction, which inherently has to do with sex. So, like, okay, I get it, but I don't want it.
But yeah, now I'm just like, oh, dang, if only I knew. That was another tag I could have added to this.
Hey, he's still out here recording stuff. So if you felt like writing another sequel.
You know what? He should do a remaster.
A remaster? Oh my god.
Do a remaster and re-release.
I don't know what there is to remaster because it's not a like sound effects heavy one.
No. He can do the juicy edit where he adds in all the sound effects.
No! No! That would just inherently make it harder to listen to. No.
Yeah, but yeah, that'll be the juicy edit to what it'll call it.
God.
You have the most unhinged ideas sometimes.
I really do.
I love you so much, but...
What is the definition of love? You love the person in spite of their insanity or something like that?
In spite of their faults or whatever. Oh, yeah. God.
But yeah, anyway, I had to mention that one because I was just like, oh! There's a word for that.
And it involves a monster, so it's got that, the tetraphilia as well.
Yeah. So it'll... You know, I am always willing to bring it up. Go check out this guy, Eli.
What was that one called?
Period juice.
Period juice. Yep. Oh, God. Oh, God. Just saying it.
The sequel was a little bit more palatable. I will admit that.
Yes.
But yeah, there you go. I'll let you take the next one.
Oh, everything is gonna be better though than that. So very lighthearted one, but with a very long name that I'm going to now struggle through. Ursusagalamatophilia. That's horrendous. It's the attraction to teddy bears.
Oh.
Yeah. Specifically teddy bears. Because there's one for, I believe, a separate one for, like, stuffed animals in general. This is
specifically teddy bears.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it goes with that whole, like, comfort thing.
I would think so. I would think so, yeah.
I guess also a certain aspect of, like, control, because it's, like, it's my teddy bear type thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's interesting. speaking of words we can't pronounce... I've got one that I can't do, so let's see if I can get through it. Selismophilia? But there's a P at the beginning, so I don't know if I pronounce it or not. But it's feeling aroused by the act of stuttering.
Oh!
Yeah. So, you know, if you're embarrassed of your stutter...
That's interesting! Oh, God!
There's a person out there for you!
That's very interesting. I'm trying to... With all of these, I try and find the logic. Same with the objects in people's orifices episodes. I try to find the logic behind it. Even though I don't think fetish necessarily needs any logic behind it. But I can't seem to understand what stuttering would do for someone. My only thing that I can think of, which I don't think is right, is it has to do with kind of being shy or socially awkward and finding that cute.
Yeah, I can also see it linking up with embarrassment. Because like if you're the one who's stuttering, there's this aspect of embarrassment, which I think that's under the umbrella. Like it's kind of light humiliation under that
right
umbrella. But yeah, I wasn't even thinking of the shy thing. I guess that would go in with that as well.
It's a multifaceted fetish.
Yeah, definitely. So I need to ask about my toe on the line one.
Okay.
So formicophilia, which is you're sexually aroused to like swarms of insects crawling on you.
That one was on my list too, because like it's different. You're not engaging in a sexual act with an animal.
Yeah.
It. I don't see myself as someone who's super freaked out by bugs or anything like that. I don't like scream if I see a bee. I don't lose my eye. Like I can kill a spider and not freak out. But I don't want them on me.
I wonder if it goes with that idea of like being overwhelmed, being consumed, being helpless type thing.
You know what? Let me look something up real quick. So there was a time where I kept having nightmares about bugs and swarms of bugs.
Oh, so like a kind of link up to people having those kinds of dreams too.
Yeah. So what was that? So it says, so basically, if you're dreaming of a lot of bugs, it means that something in your life is really bothering you. This is if you believe in dreams having meanings and all this kind of stuff. They say if bugs are crawling on your feet, there may be something is bugging you in real life that requires you to stand up for yourself. If bugs are crawling around your head or in your hair, it might suggest your mind has been infested with upsetting thoughts. There's also the something is causing you to be irritated or unsettled, and there's a lack of cleanliness and a feeling of like suffocation to go with infestation. So those could be linked, you know, me obviously having it in nightmares, it's a bad thing, but maybe people like being, well, we already know people like being claustrophobic and in small spaces, so having that kind of like swarm, I could see giving kind of the same feeling, that kind of overwhelmed, that isolation. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. But you see what I mean by it's one of those toe the line ones.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I think it's how much do you care about consent when it comes to a bug?
Yeah, like how much. Because there is also the ongoing argument about sentience among insects.
Right.
Just like, what was it? Plants. I did hear that there's this very, very rare, extremely rare eating disorder where it's the person doesn't want to eat a living thing, but they include like plants and everything because everything's alive.
So they'll eat things that like naturally fall off a tree, but they won't. So they'll eat an apple that has fallen on the ground, but they will not eat an apple by picking it from a tree. I don't remember that was called. So for our listeners, I was vegan for a little over 2 years. I'm slowly actually working back towards it because I was definitely healthier and more energetic and happier when I was. But I ran into a lot of these debates because vegans don't eat honey because it comes from bees. Bees are living creatures. But that's not always universally true. Some people still consider themselves vegan and have honey because they don't put bugs kind of in the same category as cows, pigs, fish, what have you. I don't know if there's necessarily a different name for it, because like pescatarian are people who don't eat like poultry or beef, but they'll still eat fish. I don't know that there's necessarily a different name, but there is a lot of debate on kind of where do we draw that line because of, do they feel pain? Do they have memory? Do they, what level of intelligence, just because they have, they're an animal and have a brain, does that mean that they'll know the difference?
Yeah.
And I don't know that there is an answer, but I remember as I was consuming a lot of vegan content while being vegan and making that transition, that's something that was brought up quite a lot. And it's like, where do we draw that line? I could be wrong. I definitely could be wrong, and I kind of want to look it up. But I think Gandhi did that as part of his fasting, where he wouldn't even eat plants unless, again, they had like naturally fallen themselves, like the nuts and seeds and fruit. I have to look that up, but I believe that was something that he did as a part of his fasting. And then there's people who are fruitarians and just eat fruit. And that just scares me. How can you not have protein? Your body needs it, please.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that always like stuck me is I don't know if I'm strangely picky, but there's certain seasons where just certain, it's very apparent with vegetables and fruit and anything like that. Everything like stuff that I used to love suddenly will taste bad for about 6 months to me. and then vice versa. Yeah, it's a weird thing, but I was like, I can't trust myself to get a consistent form of protein. So I was like, I gotta stick with eating meat, because you get your the eight essential amino acids that the body does not produce but needs for building blocks. Because I was like, well, seems to be the simplest way. But I think it's all like, it's down to choice, right? Like, how fortunate are we to live in countries where we have that choice, you know? Because...
Yeah. And the thing is, they call them food deserts, which is not necessarily that there's no food. It has nothing to do with, you know, a desert. But it's just like, if you live in this area, it's pretty much impossible to be vegan because you just don't have the resources.
Yeah.
And whether or not that's acceptable depends on very much the individual and who you ask. Some vegans are like, well, that's understandable. I get that, you know, I may be privileged because I live in a big city and there's vegan grocery stores and restaurants and I have a ton of options, but there's people who live in the middle of nowhere that there's all that's grown around them is like feed for animals, and it's big like beef area and dairy area, and there's stores don't carry tofu, stores don't carry a lot of these vegan options, and I don't have a lot of options for delivery. And many vegans are like, well, that's understandable, you have to survive. But then there's the ones who are more extreme and are like, there's no excuse, no human is valued more than an animal, so if you can't survive, you need to move, or that's just too bad. So it really just depends on who you ask.
Yeah, and I can't remember who I was. I don't know. I was watching like some survivalist tell stories, and a question they were asked was, can you live off of like only plants? Like, could you be vegan or vegetarian if you're trying to survive in like northern Arctic type climates? And it's like, at a certain point, no.
Yeah.
There simply is not enough to sustain you. Like, yeah. It's if you're in that situation, or if you want to do that to like as a personal development thing or something, it's like you don't have a choice. If you're not bringing in all of your rations, and if they don't remain uncontaminated, you're like, it's meat. You have no choice at that point.
When I first became vegan, I had low energy and was really just exhausted all the time. And I'm like, what's going on? And it's because I wasn't eating enough. Because when you're eating low calorie foods like fruits and vegetables, you need to increase the volume that you eat, because there's just, you're not going to get a lot of, you're getting a ton of nutrients, but you're not getting just straight up the energy that you need. And once I learned that and kind of learned what nutrient dense foods I should be eating, that are also going to provide me enough protein and calories and stuff, I was fine. And I felt much, much better than I ever did eating meat and veg, better than I do now, which is why I'm trying to transition back. But when you're in like a survival situation or the middle of nowhere, you're not going to get the volume you need to make up for the fact that plant life is generally less in calories. You're not going to get something that's junk food, because you can live on junk food and be vegan. It's not hard. But if you're talking about kind of being out in the middle of nowhere, your options are limited and you're not going to get the volume by just gathering what you find.
Yeah, exactly. So it's something to think about.
We went off quite the tangent.
We really did. That's fine.
This all started by people being aroused by insects and swarms. And
now we're talking about veganism and choices and diet and, like, you know.
Where do you draw the line? Where is sentience?
Yeah. Where is sentience? As I squeeze my stress ball eggplant.
Of course it's an eggplant. Of course it is.
I saw it and I was like, yes. I'm trying, there is a stress ball peach and I kind of want to get that because I feel like they would go together.
I want that now.
Yeah, right?
Oh my god. Wait, okay, I'm not going to go on another tangent. Never mind.
I have a weird one. Oh, okay.
I have a last one, so you do yours first. Okay.
Catheterophilia.
Does it have to do with catheter?
It sure does. So like most of these, it's not specific to oneself necessarily. It could be you using them, it could be someone else using them, but yes, it's the use of catheters, being sexually aroused by the use of catheters. Why? I've never had a catheter. I guess unless they did it when I was in surgery, I don't know if that's something they do, but I have no recollection if that's the case.
I've had one for surgery, but it was I was aware and they were telling me and being like telling me what was going on. I didn't notice anything.
Really?
Yeah, not at all. Meanwhile,
were you like medicated though?
I was medicated, so I'm wondering if that was part of it.
That might be why. I don't know anything about them, so I don't know if it's like universally painful, but it just strikes me that it would be.
Yeah, I don't. Well, because that goes into like sounding and everything like that. So
that's true.
I mean, for some people,
that's very true.
Some people, it works, I guess.
And it, you know, for people with penises, that's the genitalia. And even though it's a different hole for women, it's still in the same region.
Yeah.
As your genitalia. So maybe there's something there, I guess, but it just seems so uncomfortable.
Yeah. Plus, I don't know. It's a lot of accessory. Is that the word? Accessory? Because, like, there's other aspects of a cath. I guess, unless you just walk around with the catheter in, but, like, you have to have the tube in the bag. Or you'd just be, like, peeing yourself.
I would assume so.
All right. Anyway, I'm thinking way too much about the logistics of this. I'm sorry.
It reminds me, just last thing before we move on from the catheters. One of my favorite shows growing up was That 70s Show. And there's an episode where Kelso's trying to win a van, and it's one of those contests where everyone puts their hand on the vehicle, and then whoever's the last one who is still touching it wins. And there's another person there who's also trying to win the van and has a catheter in and like a pee bag and stuff so that they can last longer.
Oh my God.
Commitment.
That is such commitment. Oh my God. Okay, I guess I technically have two, but one of them is a subset of temperature play. It's just getting super specific.
This might be on my list too.
Yeah, so psychophilia, which is extreme temperature of you or another person. So
that is on my list, and it immediately made me picture the ending of The Shining.
Oh my God. Now that ending plays so much differently with this knowledge.
So yeah, I had it defined as arousal from freezing temperatures or objects or watching something freeze. This kind of goes in line again with the tickling thing, is there is a physical sensation there. And I mean, getting too cold can be painful, and there's a large number of people who find sexual pleasure in pain. I mean, it can be as simple as biting or hair pulling. So even though I don't necessarily have this, I still kind of get it, because when there's a physical sensation, I can see how that can be made arousing for people.
Yeah.
Sorry, I totally just like took over your choice.
No, I had nothing to say about it, so that's good.
And I mean, if you want to do people using ice cubes, does that count?
Because that's pretty common. I mean, that's in mainstream stuff.
Yeah.
Well, so like, if that counts, then, like, I've engaged in that then. I mean...
Well, like, what was it? Because I think a common one is, like, you put something cold on the person and then you, like, blow your warm breath. Like, it's a very common temperature play thing.
It's just that strong difference in temperature I could see providing a sensation. Yeah, I get that. I think that's a understandable one. I just think when I first read it, I thought of the extreme, obviously, like the end of The Shining, where someone's freezing to death.
Well, that's like me imagining these cliques of fog fetishists.
Yeah, yeah. But if you roll it back,
which goes
little...
back to the vegan thing, because like, remember how I was saying people like break out into like these cliques of like what is acceptable, yeah. What isn't. You see that with veganism so much.
Oh yeah.
Like you see that a lot with veganism. So it's a, oh man, I wonder if there's a crossover between the vegans and the fog.
I mean, no, like fetish is, well, that's not true at all. But most of these aren't mutually exclusive where you could only have one and not the other.
This is true. See, now I'm creating all these classifications of like super cliquey vegans and super cliquey fog fetishes.
No.
This is what the episode's about. cliquey fog vegans. Okay, I have one more to mention. And it's mostly because I read this and I was like, that's what that is. So hybristophilia, which is sexual interest in those who commit crimes.
Oh God, we could spend so long talking about that.
What's funny is, because there's some major serial killer examples if we yes. go to the extremes, but yes. we also have like, what is it? The common trope, the you know, the heist lovers, like,
oh yeah,
like there's that trope. I do wonder if there's any crossover between this and is it kleptomania?
The stealing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. But I could see, like, the heist lovers you're talking about, like, having the Bonnie and Clyde kind of fantasy type thing. But the serial killer thing just pisses me off.
Yeah. Well, what was it? There's this... A friend of mine met somebody like this, and I will be getting back to the serial killer thing, where like one of her older siblings' friends, this person, she was blatantly attracted to guys who were absolutely emphatically gay, not like effeminate, not like not bisexual, who were just fully gay, would never ever be interested in her, and for some reason that would make her more attracted to them.
And I wonder if it's like a challenge aspect. Now, this is going to be very, very silly, but I can't stop myself from mentioning it. I'm such a goddamn nerd. It's kind of like the whole attraction to Spock. Kind of like,
yeah,
he's unattainable because he's not interested until they did their whole remake thing. And, you know, he is half human. But like Vulcans in general, how they're standoffish and not emotional, how you want to be the one who changes them or the one exception. I kind of feel like this is in the same line where like he's gay. He's always going to be gay. He's not interested in women. He's very secure in knowledge and the fact that he is gay. And she's just kind of like, okay, but what if I'm the one exception?
Yeah. The reason why I mentioned that with this sexual interest in those who commit crimes is because I can't remember the serial killer, but he's a gay serial killer. And there is this horde of intensely like fangirly.
I mean, is it Jeffrey
women.
Dahmer?
Dahmer, thank you.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Dahmer.
Oh, yeah. Especially with the new series that came out on Netflix, that kind of reignited that.
Yeah, like I was watching a documentary called Dark Tourist. It's a documentary series and it's older.
Yeah.
But one of the things is like learning about serial killer like fans and stuff like that. And
it's like
he met these women who are like these huge fangirls for Dahmer.
And they'll send him money and I mean obviously he's dead now, but they send this is a common practice that these women will send the men money so they can get stuff from the commissary in jail and they'll try and like help these guys win their appeals or do all these crazy or just straight up marry them while they're in jail. Like the Ted Bundy one, because Ted Bundy had the same sort of thing where women were obsessed with him. And it's like at the beginning, he was, you know, innocent until proven guilty. Obviously, he was known for being charismatic. He's like with a lot of serial killers, they'll say like, oh, they seemed like a completely normal person. I couldn't believe that they would do these things. So at the beginning, it's like, okay, they think he's innocent and he's being targeted or whatever, and he didn't commit these crimes. But once it's been proven or they've admitted to it, which many of them do because a lot of serial killers want the credit. They feel like they want it, that fame. They want to live on forever and have that infamy. How can at that point you still continue on?
Yeah. And I also wanted to bring it up because I noticed on like true crime and stuff in last year, this person, well, they're a couple really, but we're going to focus on the female half of the couple. Carla Homolka was coming out in the news, and that is a very...
I don't know about this.
So it tends to be referred to as the Ken and Barbie killers.
Yes.
Yeah. where I'm from, it tends to... Because it happened in Southern Ontario, where I'm from. People know what you're talking about when you say deal with the devil. Because... And I read the play-by-play about how this happened, and it was really, like, I'm very shocked that the lawyer didn't get in trouble for this, and actually laws did change surrounding deals that are made. And I actually think that some of the ramifications of Carla Homolka have affected certain laws progressing in Canada, but I can get into that later. So Carla Homolka, aided and participated in the rape and murder of several young girls, teenagers, basically, with her. I can't remember if they were just significant others or married, but of Paul Bernardo, and she. It was always played that she was a victim. She never wanted to do these things.
Oh.
And then when she made her plea deal, which involved her getting up on the stand to testify against Paul Bernardo, which they needed, suddenly a VHS tape is produced that the lawyer had gone to the house hidden. He was told to hide these videotapes. It didn't get found in police search. I don't know why. I don't, like, the stuff has changed in the last 30 years as to how things are performed, so I couldn't tell you why it wasn't found in the search of the home. He goes back and gets it, and then he hands it over. And that is where, so everything they did was on film.
Yeah.
Or it was audio recorded. And one of the victims was her own sister. Homolka not only participated, but she was eager, according to reports. But in addition to that, because people were still like, well, you know, there was this split of like, she's manipulating all these men. No, I can fix her. I can save her. She's a poor, abused woman. And my opinion is, I have never seen somebody who had so much of a support network. If she had chosen to leave Paul Bernardo, she had friends, coworkers, family who all would have stood behind her and who all would have helped her, no questions asked.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't any of those seeming pressures keeping her with him. And then also, if it was taped, it happens once taped, once you have your smoking gun to bring to police. Nothing was ever locked up in the home away from Kalo Homolka.
That's unfortunately not an isolated thing. There's a lot of cases of like serial killer couples
I
think it stems from a lot of different things. Some cases it's like the woman has nowhere else to go and just feels like, oh, if I do this, then he'll love me and stay with me. And then there's the opposite end of the spectrum where the woman is 100% an equal participant or even to a higher degree than the man. I think it part of it is the whole you'll do things in a group that you wouldn't do alone in some cases. And then some of it is just there's fucking sick women out there.
Yeah, but the reason why I mention it is because I find that a lot of like fangirls of serial killers get a lot of flack. But Homolka has so many fanboys, or had so many fanboys, like lawyers, judges, all of these people all on her side. And it's just like, ugh. She's the one manipulating, and so it's understandable by why these men would be ensnared by her type thing. And I'm just like, no, they're fanboying because they think they can save her, they think that they can fix her, they think all of these other things. It's no different than like the fangirl, the Dahmer fangirls.
It's not any different.
Yeah. It's just these men they present themselves and their arguments very intelligently, like very logically, because that's their jobs.
Right.
You know what I mean? So they're able to like justify, make a good argument, all of that other stuff. Whereas I find most of the Dahmer fan club tends to be, you know, not women with those backgrounds. Not to say that there aren't any. It's just the ones more willing to speak about it. So I don't think it's a fair comparison, but it's the exact same thing.
Yes.
I can go into a whole thing on Carla Homolka and how, because a big thing about human trafficking, if you want human trafficking to stop, in particular sex-based human trafficking, you have to understand that there is a cycle of abuse where somebody has been taken into this world and then they grow and they help bring in others. So it's if they're going to face prosecution for what they did, they won't come forward.
That's a lot of what happened with Epstein.
Yeah.
Is he would abuse these young girls and then have those ones go get more.
Yeah, and there's calls to like make it just a blanket, we won't prosecute you if you come forward, blah blah blah. But I'm like, but the impact of Carla Homolka, that deal being made, and then the tape being discovered, I think has still affected, at least where I am, that memory has still affected the laws and why I don't picture that changing anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Because what if we get that one person who's lying?
Right.
And now we've let them get off. And it's...
Well, the general... I shouldn't say consensus because it's not a consensus, but a lot of people believe it's better to let a guilty person go than let an innocent person sit in jail.
I know, but it's one of those things where I'm like, at the same end, we see that exact situation happened in Homolka's case.
Yeah, yeah.
And people were so enraged with the court system and everything. So it's one of those things where I'm like, it's a tough call to make. And I assume people who are far more well-versed in the language of the law can figure something out there. But I do think in terms of court of popular opinion, it's a hard argument because there's that history that's still currently a fact. Like, there's still people alive today, like victims' families are still alive today who went through that. So I think it is, it's just an interesting little tidbit. But yeah, so there you go. You get my my whole like tidbit just from talking about hybristophilia. But yeah, I didn't want to let the fanboys get away because I get, it's really annoying.
Yeah, that's one thing where the difference between male and female isn't really that significant.
Yeah. It's
still icky and either way.
Yeah, it's still like, you know,
like,
baby, don't defend the serial killer. That's all we're saying.
Yeah, I don't care what their gender is. Let's just not, maybe. Yeah,
just don't. But on a lighthearted note, so you know, like the Dahmer series that came out?
Yeah.
So some poor guy right before that series came out, went out and got a haircut and glasses.
No!
He accidentally, because Dahmer has the definitive serial killer.
He has a distinct look. Yeah,
it's they've become known as serial killer glasses. Like, the TV show Peacekeeper, the character Vigilante, when he's out of costume, has the quote-unquote serial killer glasses.
Oh.
Which to me, I was like, oh, I get it. That's a nod. I see what you're doing there. But this poor guy didn't know. He didn't know, Sean. And then the series came out and he's like, damn it, and I can't afford new glasses now.
Oh.
Because it's hard to replace the frames around the lenses.
My glasses have cracks in them and I can't afford to replace them either. And my prescription's too old, so I have to go get a new prescription and then I'm just hoping they don't randomly fall apart one day because my vision's bad enough to where I could not work or function without them. So I get it, but that's brutal.
Yeah, like
it reminds me of, and I was a very young child when I saw this on the news. There was a man whose name was Harry Potter. And so as the books blew up, because this was before the movies were made, there were times where people refused to accept his ID. So they're like, this isn't real. This isn't...
Oh, no.
And he's like, that's just my name. It's always... Because he was this... Well, like I said, a long time ago, but at the time that this was being reported on, he was at least in his late 30s. Like, he was fully an adult. And all of a sudden, because a children's book got famous, it turns his life upside down. And he's like, I can't do anything without people commenting on my name. They won't take my credit cards. They do. And I'm just like, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I wanted to leave off because I knew where that fetish was going to go. So I was like,
yeah.
And like, here's a fun fact. This person didn't know until that series came out who Jeffrey Dahmer was. And and what's even worse is he had a similar face structure to Dahmer.
Oh. When I was working, I don't want to reveal too much, but I was working in a food service role and one of our dishwashers, we got a new dishwasher and everyone said he looked like Jeffrey Dahmer and they started calling him Dahmer.
Oh no.
Yeah. And that's so sad. And I would just like to say that I didn't, but all like the cooks and basically the male staff was the one who was doing it to him.
Yeah.
That just sucks because like you can't help that you need glasses and not everyone can wear contacts. I can't. My eyes are too dry and they don't work for me.
Oh, yay! So I can't because I've never been able to put the contacts in. I can't do it.
I have no problem. Like, I can touch my eyeball right now and like it doesn't bug me and I have no problem getting them in and out. But after I turned like 30, around that time, my eyes just, I have dry eye. I can barely open my eyes in the morning.
I once tried for 2 hours to get contact lenses in. Yeah, I couldn't I couldn't get them in.
Wow.
Like, just could. I was like, you know what? We gave it a college try. I I'm nearsighted. I don't need them 100% of the time. Let's do glasses. It is. There we go.
I wore contacts. I started wearing glasses, needing them when I was 8. But my parents wouldn't let me have contacts until I went to middle school. And so I don't know how old I was. What's middle school? Like 11, 12?
12, 13, I think.
12 or 13. Yeah. So probably 12, because I graduated at 7. I was a year early. So let's say 12 to about 30, I wore contacts. I never had a problem. Like, getting them in and out and stuff was never an issue. But now I can't, and I have to wear my glasses, because otherwise I am horrifically blind.
Oh no. That is something I found interesting, was people who got cataracts before cataract surgery was a thing. Mm-hmm. You're blind.
Yeah.
And then
that's just it.
I saw somebody who was putting on glasses that were different types of nearsightedness. And the most extreme one, I was just like, you wouldn't be, like, without modern technology, you wouldn't be able to live. Like, without glasses,
I say that all the time.
Be able to survive. I was like, this is nuts.
Let's say zombie apocalypse, or we have some other kind of dystopian future in store for us. If I break my glasses, I'm dead. 100%. I can't, if without some kind of corrective lenses, I can't read the one big letter on top of the eye chart.
Yeah.
It's that blurry.
It's a really eye-opening experience, but it's also interesting to be like, you know, there were people when glasses became like so commonplace,
mm-hmm.
where they literally had their blindness cured type.
Yep.
Like that, because, yeah, it's just, it's one of those interesting things, like, what is it? Perspective is relative type thing.
That's one thing, like, people always say, like, well, it's not that common, I guess, but they'll say like, oh, I miss, times were simpler in the 50s, or I miss way back when we did things this way. And it's like, do you realize how shitty the past was? And not even like the distant past, even the recent past is pretty shitty.
Yeah, there's this motto that I like. Was it vintage fashion, not values?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I like that. I like that a lot.
And it was it's a really nice thing where it's like, yeah, I would have loved to live in this aesthetic. You know, it's the aesthetic you want. It's not the time period.
There's a YouTuber I like who has a million channels. and his name's Simon Whistler.
Oh, and, yes.
So, okay, you know him?
Yes.
The past is the worst is one of his, like, catchphrases. And I actually had a hoodie for a while that was from his merch store that said the past was the worst. Past is the worst. Because it's true. Some group was disenfranchised or discriminated against, or many groups. Medical care was harder to come by and not as advanced. Education was harder to come by and not as advanced. I mean, now you can go on YouTube and learn quite literally anything. There's no reason to actually go back to the past. But I like your phrase, like vintage, what was it? Say it again.
Vintage fashion, not values.
Not values, yeah. Because the past was, in fact, the worst. Not that things are great now, but...
Although, before we get off the topic of, like, being aroused by crimes, I've one last thing to say. The past was better if you were a serial killer. Apparently some of the most prolific serial killers, apparently the best time to operate was during a world war, because everybody was preoccupied with other things that took a bit more precedence.
And anything before DNA.
Yeah, so, like, you know...
Oh, God. They're
unfortunately. But yeah, so, I always found that humorous, that, like, if you want to be a serial killer, do it during a world war.
World war. So I have two left that kind of go hand in hand and will kind of return us to the more lighthearted discussion that this episode was intended to be. So I personally am grossed out by these, but mucophilia, which is attraction to mucus, and nasolingus, which is arousal to the nose specifically, and especially sucking on a partner's nose or having your nose sucked on.
Interesting.
the thing is, like, the reason why guys like having their dick sucked is because it's sensitive. There's a ton of nerve endings and stuff. I don't think the nose is all that sensitive.
Maybe I'm like tapping the front of my nose now to be like, is there something I'm missing? But yeah, no. I don't
get it. It doesn't feel like there'd be enough of a sensation to really get you anywhere. And the mucus part is just
the one thing I've heard this from, like, it's always guys I hear this from, damn it. The ones who really like when someone's crying. The mucus is part of it. Like, not just crying, but like the full on, like,
there's something about like being messy. So like tears, mucus, like your nose is red, your makeup is like super runny and messed up. That I think is actually a pretty common thing that guys like, at least in my experience. I still don't know what it is about that is so attractive, but yeah, there's something about like that being messy and intensely crying. I don't get it.
I don't know what to say.
So yeah, that was my list. Obviously, there are many, 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 many more.
Well, there's licking of eyeballs, which, like, now we're in a territory where I don't get it. Other than, like, somebody touching you in a vulnerable place, like the
I've
nose
done
or
that
the eye.
Before, but it was like as a teenager, and it was truth or dare.
See, that's not sexual, though.
No, like, not at all. Not at all. And it tasted bad, really, really bad. Which I wasn't expecting. I kind of expected it to taste like nothing. Ugh. 0 out of 10. Don't recommend. But yeah, I mean, obviously,
if you could pick a number lower than zero.
Well, it didn't make me like vomit, but it was just like, ugh. Is that what my eye tastes like? And now I don't like it.
See, now I'd be paranoid. I'd be all like,
does my eye taste weird?
Like, what if I contaminated my eye and now my immune system knows my eyes are there and now I'm blind because my immune system attacked my eyes?
So I kind of went from ones that, you know, you may not hear about as much or a little more off the wall, because obviously there's many, many, many fetishes. Even ones that didn't kind of cross the line like we were saying, but are a bit more mainstream or well known. So hopefully you guys learned something today.
Yeah. And you know, this was what I guess one of our more like conversation-y type ones. So,
yeah,
know.
We definitely, well, I mean, I think that's also just our show is we go on tangents. I blame my ADHD because I have a new thought that comes in my head and I have to say it.
And I'm just encouraging.
So yeah. Some funny stuff, a little more lighthearted than not the whole time, but mostly a little more lighthearted than our last episode. So I don't know, maybe we'll do another serious one next. We'll see.
Yeah, maybe. And in that case, sorry, whenever I hear like maybe we'll do a serious one, I've got dun dun.
Just, oh no!
I'm assuming that's all we can hum before we.
I feel like we should stay away from true crime because one, there's a million true crime podcasts out there, and I listen to all of them. Someone's letting me use their HBO Max subscription, so I have a whole plethora of documentaries to watch. Just watched The Green River Killer, and I'm currently on The Hillside Strangler. So I also don't feel like I want to be that dark all the time.
No, but I will say, I suppose next time there is a documentary that I was interested in watching, and so maybe I can review something for you. Ooh. Which is about, like, it was supposed to be this whole way of finding, like, sexual pleasure without physical contact, and then it became a cult.
I definitely want to learn about that.
Yeah,
what the cult was called?
No, I don't remember, but I'll find it. So maybe, yeah, next episode, I will treat you. I will review and tell you about it.
That would be amazing. So, please do. Plus, have you heard of Twin Flames?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
I see it and I'm like, I need to marathon. I feel this needs to be marathoned. I'm going to have too many questions at the end of each episode.
I've watched the whole thing, so.
Oh, shoot. I got to caught up. Depending on time, we can discuss that one too. So there you have it, everybody. You know what's coming up next? Talking about some sex cults.
God, cults are so fascinating.
They really are. There was one documentary, I think it's called The Family, where the moment it becomes a cult is captured when it goes from being hippie commune to cult. Yeah, and that's when they're like, we have to get all the teenage girls to marry guys so their parents don't take them away.
Unfortunately, a common theme in cults, girls marrying older men.
Yeah, but I was just like, and that's the moment. That's the moment where it happened, right there. That is the moment. And I think a member of it was like a documentarian, so she has all this actual footage that was included. But it was they were talking about the history, like the hippie stuff, blah blah blah, and then that happened. I was like, and that's the moment. That's when it happens. So
it's almost like when people get power, men get power, the same thing happens over and over again.
Yep. So yeah. So stay tuned for May. May we've got sex cults, and we are going to be strong arming this guy Eli to come on because it's my birthday month, and he doesn't want to disappoint his stepmother. So there you go.
You better not.
I'll be so sad. All right. In that case, obligatory. We love you, Jerry.
Thank you for listening, as always.
Yeah. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Clam Jammers podcast. Check us out at clamjammers.ca for all your coven needs. Hello and welcome. Shut up, Grandpa!